How do you access people's brilliance? How do they share their brilliance? For some people, they do very well in brainstorming.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Sima Lieberman. Here's three facts I think you should know about Sima. One, she helps leaders create inclusive workplaces and communities, and she does that as a consultant, speaker, and facilitator. Two, the World Human Resource Development Congress in Mumbai presented her with the Global Diversity Leadership Award. And three, she is the host and producer of the podcast Everyday Conversations on Race for Everyday People, which is a cross-race conversation on race. And you can find that podcast at www.raceconvo.com. Sima, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Hi, George. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful to be talking with you today. You are known in some circles, most circles, as the inclusionist. And that's not hypnotist or illusionist. It's inclusionist. That's the first time I've heard that word. But I imagine that that's about including.
Exactly.
Tell us about that word, what it means to you, and what more people need to understand about that concept.
That's a really good question, George. What inclusionist means is that I help, like early we said, I help create inclusive work cultures. And I look at work cultures in terms of who's in the organization, how do people feel about working in the organization? If they feel included, if they really feel included, or if they're made to feel included, then they feel like they belong. If they feel like they belong, it means that then they're very comfortable contributing their best work, contributing their genius in the organization. They're willing to take risks. They're willing to stand, they're willing to speak up. And when people don't feel included, when they feel excluded, they don't feel part of the organization, and they're more afraid to share their ideas. They don't really see how they fit into the whole organization. They don't have a sense of belonging. And they're just there. And oftentimes people will leave. If people don't feel included in an organization, if they don't feel like they're really being valued as an individual, they're gone.
How might a leader, if you're sitting down talking to a leader about this concept, and they might be interested, they might be concerned, but how do they discover if people feel appropriately included? Because not everybody's going to get along all the time, but how do they learn what's valid when someone doesn't feel included and it's not their fault?
Well, one, by getting to know their employees. And even if they're like at the top of the chain, then they get to know the people who are the next level down, who gets to know the people who are the next level down. And they have to look at, what does it mean? What does it mean in your organization to feel included? What does it mean for you? And does everybody feel that way? So what they would need to do would be, one, is to get to know as many employees as possible, not just the people who look like them. Oftentimes what leaders do is they only really interact and get feedback from people who look like them. And it's important to get feedback and start talking to people who don't look like you. And then look at what systems and processes are present in the organization that make people feel included, and what systems and processes make people feel, some people feel excluded. And simple way too, or not a simple way, but one that doesn't take any money, two that don't take any money. One is to start saying hello to everybody in the organization. Oftentimes I have people do a hello inventory, because so often people tell me, when I do a lot of organizational development, and I do a lot of surveys and assessments of organizations, and I look at what are your strengths, what's going on with you and your manager. And people will say, oh, well, the manager doesn't say hello. And at first, what are they talking about? And I heard it from so many people. And I remember I talked to a manager and I said, well, people say you don't say hello. And he said, I say hello to everybody. And I said, I want you to do an inventory and I want you to see who you say hello to every day. And are they just people who look like you or people who you know? So he came back and he said, you know what? You're right. I really only really acknowledge people who I know or who look like me because I just don't feel that. He said, I don't really feel comfortable talking to people who are different. I mean, it wasn't like he was a bad person. He just didn't feel comfortable. I said, okay, here's what you're going to start doing. You're going to start saying hello to at least three new people every day. And you're going to ask them in your organization, you ask them for their name, how they are and what they do, and ask them if they have any suggestions for what can happen that would make their work easier or help them be more effective in what they do. And I started doing that. And with so many leaders now, and people find that that's so, they're always, wow, I can't believe it. Oh, I'm shocked. I thought I said hello to everybody. But that's one way, because just saying hello to people and asking them their name and asking them what they need makes people feel more included. That gives like a sense of inclusion. Of course, it's not the only answer. And another action people can take is to look at how do you access people's genius? How do you access their feedback and how do you access their ideas? In some organizations I've worked with some leaders who say, well, we have brainstorming sessions and we hear from everybody in our brainstorming sessions, but some people just don't speak up and we ask them, but they just don't speak up. I said, you don't know what kind of genius you're missing because not everybody is good at brainstorming. Not everybody is going to throw out their ideas. So you have to look at how do you access people's brilliance? How do they share their brilliance? For some people, they do very well in brainstorming. Other people, maybe English isn't their first language, or maybe they're an introvert, or maybe they're more from a very collective culture where people don't just speak out like that. So I said, one thing that you might do is in a group setting, you can go around and ask people one-to-one, like, you know, one-by-one, like give feedback. Because oftentimes some people do better. They want to speak out, but they don't do brainstorming because they don't want to interrupt people or whatever the reason is. But if you give people, this is your turn to talk, people will talk. Or I'll also have people write out. So first I want you to write out your ideas. And just having people write, some people are much better, can articulate their ideas better by thinking and then writing. You know, they process internally. And that's very effective. And then you have people share their ideas, either one-on-one or with another person or in a small group. And then in a large group, or you as a manager could take people, different people out to lunch or coffee and ask them one-to-one for their ideas. Because when you know how to access people's brilliance, then you know what you need to do in order to have everybody contribute. Because you don't know what ideas you're missing out on. When you're not being fully inclusive, you don't know what ideas and genius you're missing out on. And again, those people will leave if they don't feel like they're being included. If they feel like they're underestimated and nobody really cares what they think, they're gone.
Now, in a typical meeting, if the supervisor or manager leaders leading a meeting, at some point they might reach out to the group and say, who has a thought on that? And there's always some who speak out more than others. Should that person go to the person who's not speaking, or would that be considered picking on them?
No. It depends on how you do it. If you say, hey, man, you didn't talk in the meeting. What's wrong with you? Yeah, you're picking on them. If you say, I really value your ideas. We didn't get a chance to hear from you. What do you think? And do it separately. Then you'll get some ideas because when you're talking about communication, it's not just about you, right? Or how you communicate. It's about how do other people get their message across and if you think their message is important. And if you only rely on brainstorming, if you only rely on a group, in a group discussion, you may not get the kind of communication from people that you want because they may not, even though they may speak out because they feel like they have to, they may not articulate their thoughts that clearly.
So to reach some people, it's not good enough to they might feel embarrassed or to speak in the group, or they might feel it's not their place.
Yes.
In that case, it's best to talk with them one-on-one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they may not be able to articulate their thoughts that quickly. They, you know, if they're an internal processor, they need a little bit of time to think. And you need those internal processors, because sometimes they're the ones that will give you the most detailed and step-by-step suggestions for how to solve a problem.
And being one of those internal processors, I know that we ask the best questions.
Yeah.
When we're given a chance.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you're able to take the time to think about what it is that you want to say. Hmm. And you don't just talk off the top of your head, which is okay too for some people. But if you only have that, you miss out on so much.
Now, let's look at the other. There's two topics here that are linked together. One is inclusion, the other is diversity, and diversity meaning being different, inclusion meaning, well, not so different after all. So let's look at the diversity side, because that seems to present a challenge for a lot of people. Why do you think that is?
Well, it depends on it's how people define diversity, number one, because when you look at diversity, it's according to Roosevelt Thomas, who was, I guess you could say, the grandfather or grandperson or whatever of diversity and inclusion in organizations. See, the late Roosevelt Thomas, he passed away a few years ago. He said diversity is all the differences and similarities that people bring to the workplace and the ensuing complexities and tensions that go along with that. So just because you have diversity, I mean, you want to have diversity, but oftentimes when people think diversity, they just think representation of people who look different. And if people don't know each other, if they don't feel included, people will leave and you won't get the benefit of their brilliance. So that's why you need inclusion. So you need the diversity, but you can't just look at diversity as, oh, how many Black people, how many white people, how many Asian people. You look at, we want a diverse workforce. So let's look at, if it's everybody's white, we need more than just white people. Everybody's men, we need more than just men. Everybody's a certain age. We want to have different kinds of people, but then what do we do with those different kinds of people? And that's where the inclusion comes in. Because if you have different kinds of people, but you want everybody to act the same way, then you're not really benefiting from diversity. And diversity alone isn't enough. Because if people aren't comfortable, if you haven't created an environment where people feel comfortable, then people will end up just being in silos. And people will bring their biases and assumptions to work, and they just tend to congregate amongst themselves because that's where they feel comfortable. So your role as a leader is to be able to create an environment and opportunities for people to be able to talk and have meaningful conversations. Like one thing that you might do is create an innovation team around a particular issue or a particular product and bring a diverse group of people on that innovation team. Also from different work functions, different levels, and create opportunities for people to talk, get to know each other, and to do some problem solving together.
Now that's interesting. I just thought I heard something in there when diversity could, for example, be something as simple as mixing marketing with engineering.
Yeah.
Having people who think differently.
Yeah. You want to have people who think differently. And you want to have people who think differently. You want to have people from different backgrounds, because people from different backgrounds have different experiences. So they have the different perspectives and they could know how to appeal or to be able to reach different kinds of people.
Now, I can certainly see how, for example, if we're taking a product to market and we're marketing in marketing different audiences, I can see how a diverse mix of people from different cultures and different sort of thinking can contribute. Say, well, you know, that marketing program might work in this part of the country or in this country, but not this country, because people see that whole story differently.
That's right. That's right. And if you only have people, if you have people who don't know that, they could end up offending people and they could end up losing a whole lot of business, which has happened in the past.
And as a, as a speaker, one of the lessons I've learned is that there are gestures that we might use in North America, with you know, especially with our hands, that might be okay here, but in other cultures can be perceived as being just wrong.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Even, you know, like, and I think in our culture, like in the U.S., what was it? I think was it going like this or something, that everything is a-okay is offensive. I think it was in Australia. It means, you know, like the middle finger. And at the same time, different gestures are being hijacked by different groups too. So you want to be able to see you need to know what's appropriate and what's inappropriate.
So a leader within a workplace organization, let's assume that they do have a somewhat diverse group in terms of gender and race. How can they check their own behavior and language to not offend people?
Well, first they have to understand themselves. They have to look at, who are you? What's your background? Where do you come from? Why do you see things the way you see them? Because we all have reasons. I mean, you're from Canada, right?
Yes.
And I don't know, you know, one of the stereotypes we have is that Canadians are much more polite. I don't know. It might be, but overall, I found this to be true, not all the time. But like, I'm from the Bronx, New York. And so we tend to be, not everybody, of course, but the culture tends to be more direct, like, hey, what the hell what the heck are you doing, man? Blah, blah, blah. But that might not be appropriate. I moved from the Bronx to Oregon, which is very, very different, which is more country. And I had to learn how to adjust myself so that I wouldn't offend people. So you first have to know who you are, where you are, why you see things the way you do, and look at the fact that you are a product of your environment, and other people are also a product of their environment, their upbringing. So it's not like it's a right way or a wrong way, but you got to understand that. And once you understand that, it's easier for you to understand other people, because you have to be able to look at, what are your biases? And once you're in touch with your biases, you could see, am I dealing with this person? Or am I having this impression of this person out of my bias? Can I really listen? Is my bias interfering with their ability to do their best work? Is my bias interfering with my ability to actually listen to what they're saying and to really hear their ideas?
In some ways, and you know, why are we the way we are? We tend to feel comfortable with our family, our culture, and therefore we might feel threatened by people who look and sound different from us.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And that's why when you know yourself, you want to look at yourself and look at all your multiple identities, like who you are around your race. What about your age? What about where you're from specifically? What are your interests? What's your work function? All of that. What are your hobbies? And when you know a whole big picture of yourself, then you look for ways where you could connect with another person who may look and sound very different than you, but maybe you both like basketball, or I don't know. I was in this group of Jews and Palestinians several years ago, and many of the Jewish people really didn't know any of the Palestinians. The Palestinians didn't know Jewish people. But these two people, it was so funny because they both discovered, it was a Palestinian guy and a Jewish guy, and they both discovered that they really liked Bob Dylan. And so had they not had that conversation, they might have just gone with some stereotypes that they had learned about each other. But because they were able to find that connection, they became friends, and then it's easier to talk about other things.
Now, that's an interesting concept, because it sounds like, although we need to accept and embrace diversity, probably an overused term, but maybe one way to do that is to find the bridge that we have in common.
Yeah, because once you connect with people, then it's easier to talk about differences. And then differences become really interesting to you. And you have to realize that you're looking at things from your perspective. So you might find somebody who's different than you strange, but they might find you strange. But when you talk to each other, then you find each other much more interesting.
And I suppose it's the differences that make us interesting. I mean, we want to have something in common, but if we have everything in common, it's a boring conversation.
Well, it is boring. And that's why it's always interesting to look at, you know, where were people raised? I grew up in the Bronx. So for me, I was telling somebody that where I was raised, you always wanted to live on a busy street. You felt safer on a really busy street. And when I moved to Oregon, people were talking about they wanted to live somewhere quiet. And I was thinking, that would be really scary. But to them, if they saw a lot of people on the street, they would get scared because they would think that something happened. Or when I was thinking something you said earlier, I was thinking about communication styles. I'm Jewish, I'm from the Bronx. We tend to have an overlapping communication style. And what that means is that it's you talk, but I don't let you finish. I'm not being rude, but I want to connect with you. So before you even get quite finished, I jump in and I share a story also. So we overlap. In general, like in US culture and in Canadian culture too, it's more that I talk, then you talk, then I talk, then you talk. And so the overlapping style can be considered rude. And in some Asian cultures and Native American cultures, it's I talk space, you talk space. And the respect is in that space. I remember one time I got a call from a woman who was Korean, and she said, "You gotta help me." I said, "What?" "I'm dealing with these Jewish women on this project, and the two of them are so rude." I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Because they're always interrupting." And I said, "Well, here's what's happening. They're actually, in their mind, they're showing respect for what you're saying, and they're showing that they're listening and that they want to interact with you." And then I talked to these two Jewish women, and they said, "Yeah." They said, "We don't think she really listens." I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "Well, we feel like we always have to repeat ourselves because we say something and she just sits there for a minute before she even says anything. So we think she's not really listening." I said, "No. In her culture, the respect is in the space. In your culture, the respect is in the overlap." But what I have found in when I work with people in organizations, that unless I'm working with people who are just like me, who have an overlapping style, there's other cultures that have overlapping styles too, that I have to use a more dominant style of you talk than I talk and you talk than I talk. Even though it might not be my natural style, but in order to be able to get those results. But at the same time, my natural style is overlapping.
So that suggests that when we might be offended by a different style, somehow we need to discover whether the person is respecting us or disrespecting us. How do we do that? Do we say, are you disrespecting me?
No, well, you look at the whole picture. What are they like overall? Do they respond to you? No, I mean, even though some cultures don't use eye contact, but if you're talking and somebody turns their head and walks away, you know they don't care what you're saying. They're disrespecting you. So you have to look at what messages are they giving you? What are they saying? And what about all the other interactions? So it's not just a one component. So you have to look at the overall relationship.
Now, does that mean that in order to have people around us feel comfortable with the diversity, that we need to adapt our communication styles to be somewhat similar to what they're familiar with?
No, not necessarily. It depends. I mean, like, it's important to be culturally intelligent. And when you're culturally intelligent, that means that you have the ability to communicate and work effectively with people who are different than you, no matter whether you know anything about them or not. So if I'm going to an organization and I want to look at the culture and I want to look at what they do and how they do things, if I'm going to a country, and I will adjust my actions to be able to develop relationships and work effectively with people. But in an organization, when you're looking at creating a more diverse work culture, and say everybody is all white guys over 40, Christian men, you know, like heterosexual, and they want to have more diversity, then what they need to start thinking about is, it's not about bringing everybody in who's going to act like them. It's, what do we need to do, one, to make people feel comfortable, and what do we need to do to adjust our culture so people are more comfortable? Because in an organization, if you want to have an inclusive culture, it means you have to sometimes go through transformation, and you have to be able to adjust.
Is there such a thing as a diversity index?
Yeah, they have diversity indexes. Different companies have diversity index of how included people feel. I mean, there's different types of diversity indexes. Ultimately, though, it's important to be able to talk to people who work in that organization and look at, are people staying? Are they leaving? What does the organization look like? How creative is the organization? And just watch people. Well, I mean, now we're all working from home. But when you can, like, watch how people interact, even on a Zoom call, how are people interacting?
Oh, that's interesting. So if you're on a Zoom call, watch who is actually connecting with who might give you an idea of, okay, there seem to be little cliques in here.
Yeah.
Especially if the cliques seem to be defined by physical appearance.
Yeah. And if people don't know each other, that's what happens. You've got the white people over here. You have maybe the Filipino people over here. You have black people over here. And that's not really helping the organization. I mean, it might be helping the organization, but overall it's not, because you want to be able to look at how do I get the best of everybody. And the best of everybody is when you can get people to collaborate. So people have to know each other. So people have to, you have to have some opportunities for people to know each other and also to work together to solve problems in order to be able to collaborate. And studies have shown that that a diverse workforce is more effective, and people are able to solve problems much quickly and be more creative when they know each other. I mean, not that they know each other before, but when, as a leader, you create opportunities for people to actually talk and interact with each other, more than just bringing people into a room. I mean, you can bring them into a room, that's better than them not being in a room together, but.
And I want to point out what might not be obvious to some people is, if I understand this right, diversity isn't necessarily the goal. It's just a tool to the goal.
Yes. But the end is, it could be an initial goal. Okay, let's get more diversity. Like say the police force, let's get more diversity in the police force, like in the United States. But when you have more diversity in the police force, what are you going to do? Because there's been a lot of issues around racism and police brutality. So what are you going to do to change that culture in that organization so that people stay, people feel comfortable? Because there's been a lot of hazing of, like, black police officers, brutality against black police officers or police officers or Hispanic or Latinx or Asian. So what are you going to do to make sure that everybody is comfortable, that people could do their best work? And what that means is they have to look at what's the system. You know, you have to look at the systems and processes, and you have to look at rooting out people who are police officers who are racist. So what are you going to do? How are you going to do that? You have to look at how do people communicate? How do you know that people are racist? I mean, a lot of times if you know, you know. But what can you change about your practices as a police force? So if your practice is that you send people into a black community who are dressed like stormtroopers, and you've created an environment where people think of the black community as like a place where you need to go and impose order, then you're perpetuating that stereotype and you're perpetuating the opportunity for police brutality. But if you are looking at how can I work with that community, how does the community have some input in who gets to be a police officer, what do they need in the organization, or any community, like LGBT community, any community, that's going to make a difference.
What comes first, diversity or culture change?
Well, you have to do it at the same time, because if you just have diversity and the culture is the same, people are going to stay a day, or they're going to come in and they're going to shut down immediately. So you need to look at your culture. What is the culture in your organization? What do you need to do to make it? Is it a culture where people actually interact and say hello? What do you need to how do you educate people? Do you need to educate people about diversity and inclusion in advance, that you have people do their research, people learn? And as you bring new people in, you don't just bring in, like, say, one Black person or one Hispanic person. You need to bring in more than one, because if it's only one, you're not going to really see any kind of real change. And you have to be willing to look at your culture. What happens in your culture? Just even from the time when you interview people, when you're doing an interview, research has shown that people tend to hire people who they want to go and have, like, a coffee with or a beer with. And those people tend to be just like them. So you want to be able to change how you interview people. You want to be able to, first of all, train people to be able to make connections with people who don't look like you. And you want to be able to have interviews where it's more than just you doing an interview. For instance, you could say, well, I ask everybody the same questions, but actually you don't. You ask people the same questions maybe, but you don't ask it the same way. And the follow-up is not the same. So you may ask them the same initial questions, but if you're not comfortable, if they're different than you and you have your own biases, you ask that question, you don't really follow up. You just ask the question, they don't get the smile, they don't get the extra cup of coffee, they don't get introduced to anybody. So that's why you want to look at those practices or where you recruit from even.
Sima, I want to let people know about the programs that you provide. You provide coaching programs for leaders on how they can talk about issues around race, social justice, and inclusion within their organization. You also help facilitate dialogues across differences in organizations. And the result of that is to result in better, more effective collaboration and allow people to bring out their genius, bring it to the workplace. Sima, in wrapping up, if you had one, two, or three pieces of advice to offer to business leaders, workplace leaders in this 2021 to go forward with this and make it a more positive, diverse, safe place to work, what would be those one, two, or three pieces of advice?
Well, first, know yourself. Look at who you are. Look at your background, why you think the way you think, and think about your biases. I mean, and admit to yourself that you have biases. You don't have to tell everybody what your biases are, but think about what they are and where they came from. So what can you do to change to combat those biases? And I talk about that. And if everybody has any questions, they can feel free to contact me. I'm more than glad to give people a, you know, brief phone conversation and talk about that. And then I say, take diversity to lunch. And when I say take diversity to lunch, I mean, talk to, get some people who don't look like you, who are different than you. Invite somebody to lunch and just talk about, I mean, just don't say, hey, what's it like to be a Black person? Or what's it like to be a white person? But ask them about their background, ask them about how they grew up, and be willing to share how you grew up. And then I would say, do a hello inventory. Look at who you say hello to and who you talk to. And make sure that you get to know even the names of three new people a day, depending on how big your organization is, but get to know people better. And fourth, I would also say, look at your systems and processes, from hiring, through promotion, through contribution, and get a diverse team together and have people look together at your systems and processes and look at what needs to change to make them more inclusive and where are the opportunities for bias and exclusion.
My guest today is Sima Lieberman. Leaving you with this key message, diversity might simply start with hello.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.